Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thinker Girls Pod Channel. I'm Stacey June.
And I'm Christy Mercer. Hello.
Hello.
What are you doing? How are you? Have you stopped to ask yourself today?
We're getting to the thick of it.
Check in, because this part of the year gets heckers with a Z.
Yeah, it's loose and I'm happy about it. Happy to sign out of this year.
You were capping off 2018 literally in like September,
August,
October.
Yes.
You were like, I'm so over this year. I know I shouldn't write it off.
Do you know?
No, because there's almost half left.
And I was saying that before my brother got sick too. It was like I just sensed it was going to be bomb after bomb, like lesson after lesson. But I'm sure those years are the ones you look back and know that, I don't know, you were transformed a bit. Matt Preston gets a bit deep like this on our interview with him today. He is a very wise soul. And we speak about MasterChef, obviously, and why he thinks that I guess the chemistry between him, George, and Gary is quite powerful, but then also the essence of the show, which I didn't realize they were so involved in.
We speak to him about being a romantic and also his kind of take on what it is to be a man and a gentleman, like in 2018 too, which I found really interesting as well. Also this level of flamboyancy and sense of self that he's had from quite a young age, which you see this creativity and expression and zero fucks attitude that he has, even with the clothes that he wears.
Yeah.
You see him play and have fun in life, which I think is really cool to see, especially when you see a man in a suit, you immediately think of a particular, I don't know, shades of darkness. And I know it's not just the suit. I'm meaning that as quite a symbolic thing that we kind of go, okay, well, if you're a dude in a suit, you're ex. And he's kind of like, stuff that, here I am, babes.
Yeah, and he's just got a passion for fashion. It's like, it really is that simple. A lot of people wondering what the layer of it, you know, under all of it. But we'll let him talk to you about that. Before we get to the interview, we want to do a really big shout out for the last few tickets of our live show. It is not going to be a podcast show. It's a live panel show. We have numerous different guests across Adelaide, Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney. We are coming to you guys, and this is our last show of the year. We don't tour that much, so we would absolutely love to see you when we hit your city. And the tickets are at thethinkergirls.com.au.
Especially for those in Brizzy and Adelaide. I guess we are in this place where we're like, okay, we've never done this kind of a live show in these kind of places before. So if it comes to, I don't know, maybe a little bit down the track where we think about going again, it'd be really nice for us to come back and say hello. So if you do listen to the podcast.
Yeah, we're gauging our audience.
Yeah. We're sussing. That's what I was trying to say.
We're sussing you out. Where are you? Which crevice of the country do you live in?
Seriously.
Because we know you guys in Melbourne and Sydney are epic supporters, so we are really excited to get to you guys, but as well as meet some new faces.
Oh, shiz. All right, over to our chat with Matt Preston.
Matt Preston, welcome to the Thinker Girls Pod Channel.
I'm excited to be in the epicenter of the TG posse.
I want to talk to you about chemistry because I think, you know, having done 10 seasons now, there is a real sense that when you watch the show, the chemistry and the way that you bounce off each other. And I saw an interview with you and Gary and George. Maybe it was in The Project, I think. And there was a conversation around how you've gotten to know each other over this decade, but then also sometimes when it works, it just works. And I was watching that. I was watching that interview with such interest, in particular because there's so much conversation, I suppose, with what we do with Stace and I as the Thinker Girls, and having done,
you know, both of us separately, different radio shows with different dudes, that whole, you know, with radio and trying to kind of manufacture and make this thing that you kind of just can't really put your finger on why.
I think chemistry is fascinating. The three of us are all from Melbourne. We all knew each other prior. George and Gary, obviously, George was Gary's apprentice for, you know, all those years at the Sofitel. And then George went to go and work with Gary and like Remy Capaldi at Phoenix. I'd known them for probably 10 years through Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, writing reviews, all that stuff. So we kind of all knew each other.
Yeah.
And it so made it easier for us to fit into a kind of a group. We're all from Melbourne. We've sort of got similar contacts. I think because we identified, we all had different strengths.
Yeah.
And so we kind of, so that made it fit together. But because we filmed for the first 4 years in Sydney, and
I didn't know that.
So we all live in Melbourne, and we were moving to Sydney. So we came up on a Sunday. Gary was living up in Sydney at Willoughby. George and I would move up. We'd fly up every Sunday and then go back every Thursday. Because of, you know, without having the normal family, friends, support network, it forced us much more closely together. Also, it's a totally alien thing. TV is so different to anything else you do because there are all those people and there's all that. If you've seen Unreal, there's all this kind of producing going on. So I think definitely we talk about ourselves being a triangle, like three sides of the same shape. And triangles are so we've all got each other's back, but we're all very different in terms of everything other than probably food. I think that was the interesting thing, was we all realised pretty quickly that we all felt the same way about what was a good dish and what was a bad dish. Because there's we always talk about that kind of opinion being objective, but the reality is that food's pretty subjective. We all talk about food being subjective, but actually it's very objective. But if you ask people if you give them a list of 10 restaurants in Sydney that they've been to, they'll probably put the restaurants in the same order. If you ask them for 10 wines, they won't necessarily. And so I think there's an intrinsic truth about what makes a good dish that that made it easier for us to kind of sit together. We're also, I think, because we've all been there for 10 years together, and the machine around us has changed. Different people come in, things change. Mm-hmm. We also are in a situation to be able to say, we've done that before, it didn't work because of this. And we've managed to convince, we're lucky that when we get to cast the show, we're given 50 people to look at and we pick our favourites.
So you're involved in that.
When we make the decision. When you see the top 50, we're making the choice on whether we think that person's
good or not. I don't think many people know that.
No, people might think it's an unreal situation. Keep this guy in because of it.
Yeah, well, you know? And I think... 100%.
And even when you walked in and you spoke, before we started recording, you spoke about, we spoke about the finale and how Ben really struggled and the points was very different. And you were speaking about how you looked at the spikes. You're very obviously very, very involved in the storylines and how things go.
Well, I think in order to be allowed to make those decisions, when you talk about, you look back at season 3 with Hayden Quinn, who was amazing, who's, doing great media stuff now, was on Family Food Fight for the first season. He's TV gold. He'd been in a media challenge. The numbers were jumped by 150,000 numbers, But he put up a bad dish, he went home. There was no pressure on us to keep him. Marion Gadsby the year before. And I think that's one of the things about the show that's good. They're very transparent. So we have people on set. We let the media come and watch. We let members of the public come and watch. Right. And if you're a sponsor, you come on down, come to a filming, come recording, see that the one-hour challenge is the one-hour challenge. That's quite rare in competition TV because they like to,
smoke and mirrors.
And allow themselves the flexibility to do stuff. Do you think the show
would have ever been as successful as it has had it not been built on that real place of authenticity? Or would you have ever been involved in it if it wasn't?
No, I passed being involved in other shows because they were cast like a drama and you never had a role to play. You're the villains. You're the battle heroes. You're probably going to win. And it's a bit. I want to be in a show that's kind of like a football game rather than a show that's like World Federation West, WWF or WWE, where everything's kind of done to an archetype.
Yeah. I'm going to crush you.
That's right. Yeah. And then the bad guy knocks him out, but then the good guy comes back, and it's the white hat versus the black hat.
And then who wears a cape? I did to get married, actually.
And there's nothing wrong with a cape.
Especially if I can see him one. Look at that.
Yeah, secret cape, beautiful. But like, I think season one, you know, there was that situation where we had some of our last four in the first season of MasterChef. We had Justine Schofield, lovely girl next door, great cook, and Chris Badenoch, who was the Cat in the Hat, who was kind of, you know, if it was a 9-ingredient challenge, he'd cook with 7 and get himself a beer and a cheese, finish early, drink the beer and cheese. He was your archetypal kind of, you know, hipster bad guy in a way. Everyone's thinking, oh, it's going to be the black hat versus the white hat. It's going to be the girl next door versus the, you know, the dark guy in the hat. And they're going to fight out. They both went out 4 and 3 respectively. We ended up with Poe and Julie Goodwin punching themselves going, how do we both get here?
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're here. And then they cooked and it was great. And Julie did a brilliant job and she won. But to a degree, you know, there's a bit of a movement towards television and film that isn't predictable. It isn't boy meets girl, loses girl, meets girl again, lives happily ever after. It's much more...
Audiences are smarter.
It's much more Game of Thrones, you know.
Red wedding vibes.
Ned Stark getting beheaded. But he's a hero. You can't kill the hero.
That show is so good because I don't know if you need... Stace is tapping out because she hasn't seen Game of Thrones, so...
I don't need to watch light entertainment where I need an encyclopedia to explain what's going on.
You can just turn around so Matt and I can have this chat about GOT.
I think it's the same, and it's the same with, you know, the now much maligned House of Cards, that predictable story arc, that predictable narrative arc, which TV relied on so everyone felt comfortable, that's kind of gone now.
And the predictable villains and the predictable people that you love.
And with Marsha, you just don't know. It's all going to, if they do a good job, they'll stay. If they don't, they'll go home.
And you can tell that you guys don't know because it is. Well, it's like a live performance, right? You can be the greatest cabaret performer ever and break your leg in one show. Don't know.
Oh my God, the magic egg. There is a substance coming out.
I want to
go back to that conversation of stereotypes, right? Yeah. Because you said the three of us, Gary, George, and myself, we are this triangle, equal parts, equal sides. We have each other's back. We can't stand up as a triangle without it. Stunning. Well, I'm interested to know if you've pulled apart the triangle, and maybe this is harking back to season one, right, where we go, okay, we've got these three guys, like, and Gary is this guy, and George is this guy. But who are you?
When it started, the reason they cast the three of us, they cast Gary because he was a hard man who was going to cry. So this is the classic sentimental bloke. They cast George because he mangled language, and they cast me because I wore a cravat. And that was the reason. That was the absolute reason why they cast each of us. I think in terms of, you know, maybe you liken it to Gary's the businessman. Gary's the nuts and bolts. Gary's great. Gary's Mr. Technique. Gary's absolute. He's absolutely. You know, in reality, George is Mr. Soft Heart. You know, you feeling okay? That kind of stuff. You can do it. You know, that kind of stuff. And I suppose I'm the kind of the nerdy, stupid one.
Who also has the leveler of the two.
No, I don't know about level. I think we all have roles to play. I never really thought about what my role within that three is. We've all eaten and travelled a bit, but I'm kind of a bit of a food nerd. I think Adam Liao described me as a large food encyclopedia in pink pants. Food encyclopedia robot in pink pants, which is probably pretty accurate.
Okay.
It's like ridiculous clothes, but I know a little bit about food.
Well, going back to the pink pants, where does that begin in your life? You get to a certain point, 5 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk to us? Dress up.
Cowboy outfit.
You got cowboy boots on right now, so
his mom was like, he's just tasted something delicious. Like when you think of the
my mum taking the stovepipe jeans and cutting the side and putting a big V of Technicolor old curtain material to give me flares. They look good. And then being a punk and going into one of my best friends always says we both used to like that kind of that same kind of era of trash music. We'd go into op shops because op shop was all we could afford and buy stuff, and he'd come out with like nothing and I'd come out with armfuls of stuff going, yeah, wow. Look at this floral shirt, it'll be amazing with the. And so yeah, I've always played around. I love things, wearing things, and yeah. I'm not really concerned about what other people think about what I wear.
And never have been.
No, never have been. What I wear now is just a more polished version of what I was wearing 20, 30, 40 years ago, whether it's, you know, white pants with red and green polka dots and a pair of motorcycle boots or, you know, whatever.
Has it been like kind of a simple system that people think there is a more complex reason behind it, or do you find identity in it? Do you find expression?
There's lots of, you know, no, and there's whatever I do, there's deep thinking in it. It's not, right. You know, I mean, there's an element of, oh wow, that's really big in Europe right now, we ought to wear bright coloured pants, and then, you know, 2 years later along come our friends from One Direction that are all wearing the same pants, and you kind of go, yeah, I'm like Harry Styles' dad. But a lot of the stuff that I wear is based on there's a great fashion history in Australia that kind of, if you look back to the 1870s, there's a thing called flash dressing. And so all the bush rangers and all the troublesome lads in Melbourne in particular, they'd wear these polka dot shirts and these Spanish heel boots, like cowboy boots with Spanish heels. They'd all have stocks or cravats on. They'd have mixed fabrics. They might wear denim and denim jeans and then like a big heavy tweed coat and a waistcoat. So yeah, there's lots of stuff. There's lots of underground references there. Teddy boy drape coats. Which is where the frocks really came from. They started as being that kind of look of the fat controller, and then, you know, the long coat. But then, you know, you accessorize.
Half back to that punk thing.
And then, you start accessorizing with. I haven't quite got to wear the crepes old brothel creepers, but they might come back at some point.
Crepes old brothel.
You know, that's really thick. That's 50s teddy boy shoes. They're like they've got 6 5-inch crepe soles. And they're all one level, and it's what they pick kids used to wear in the 50s.
I feel like 60s. They look like they might be like my gold loafer platform. Like they've got that big platform.
Nowadays, you actually see runners, like some of the very expensive Gucci runners.
Oh,
like that.
Yeah, the platform.
You know, the giant fat crepe wedge with stuff on the top.
That's my gold one that I bought from the street market in India.
Yeah. And so they all that all dates back. One of the inspirations of that all dates back to the 50s. So I do read it, but I do love my fashion. I do love my fashion history. So there's always a bit more going on than. And then there's also stuff, you know, for me, the other thing is we sit down at the beginning of every year and go, we started, you know, I wanted to, if we're going to wear suits, and I wanted to wear stuff that wasn't, you know, the grey and the blue. And so we started by finding very early on checks and tartans. Before Liam was wearing them, then we started wearing those, and then suddenly the next year of fabrics come through and they're more checks and tartan. Jack London's doing a version of tartan. We've got all these fabrics we've played with, plus also what about pastels, because pastels are great. When I started, it was all the colours we wore were all kind of sorbets.
It's always
been there, and it's just I don't talk about it much, just go, that's a nice coat. You know, and then there's stuff where you go, okay, well we don't have very much budget. I spent all the budget on this. How about look at these golf pants? The wonderful golf label called Loudmouth, and Loudmouth have got all these ridiculous trousers, like golf trousers.
Yeah, right.
That are really comfortable to wear. So the first pair of pink pants that I wore were a pair of $70, you know, on special golf pants that I wore on Rove Show with a brown velvet jacket, and I thought they look great. And so from that kind of, you try that and go, what else can we do now after that? Right. And so that we found these amazing kind of pants that are in an argyle pattern, which is like bright colored diamond shapes of like red and green and white, and then you'll see them on, you know, argyle, lots of people have argyle socks. And these were pants, and they were crazy. So you play with them for a bit, and they look quite fun, and they're quite good.
What's the process for you from the wardrobe? The
process is myself and Charmaine Di Pasquale decide what we're going to wear, and then if we wanted something a little bit out there, like this year we had one of my favourite things.
We committed this year, didn't we?
The most challenging thing was I wore this dark blue blazer with these green and white pants and big green and white candy stripes on them. So the stripes were probably about 5 centimeters wide, and I love them. They looked amazing, but they were obviously going to be challenging for the producers, who were maybe a bit more conservative in their taste. So what you do is you find a really disgusting pair of trousers. I think these were the ones I picked, were like green with red and yellow and purple balls on. They were revolting. And said, I want to wear these. And they go, I'm not sure about those. They go, okay, well, if we don't wear those, can we wear these? And they go,
oh, very good.
And they go, that stripe looks quite conservative.
Oh, very good.
It's, you know, it's, I think where they call it an ambit claim. Now I've said I won't be able to do it anymore. But certainly that kind of idea, because to a degree there is a small little segment of the MasterChef gang that love what I wear, because either they love it because they like the kind of the bravery and the stupidity of it, or they like it because they want to make fun of it, which is also part of the game.
I've seen heaps of blogs just dedicated to your outfits.
Well, and
I was looking around,
but isn't that what fashion is too? You know, like, it is that people have fun or laugh or create some form of feeling, regardless of what it is.
But I think also you've got to, you know, I mean, style is about throwing yourself, you know, down a narrow track, and sometimes, and then being man enough to, boy enough, girl enough to turn around and go, that wasn't right, and go back. But the whole point being that it shouldn't matter. You know, I love the fact that in the time of Headmaster, what men wear has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
The tie's gone. You know, the idea of an Australian man wearing a pale blue shirt and a dark blue suit. Nowadays, men wear pinks and purples, and it's fantastic
Prince,
to see.
Yes.
And, well, and florals. It is nice. It is really nice to kind of be able to take those risks, and then hopefully, you know, hopefully then blokes who want to wear that, because blokes have a weird thing about fashion. Blokes are quite conservative, but there's always that little bit of them that's a bit.
How everyone's like 8% gay, basically.
Well, it's a curiosity.
I call it the comedy shirt. You know that
the party shirt,
and we've all got one. You know,
my dad in the '80s and nineties was a cardigan. You know, something that they also had with colour, or something they could make.
Or it could just be wearing red socks or whatever. It's a way of expressing your own. I think that's lovely to see that. It doesn't have to be. You don't have to wear a pastel pink suit. And look like a kind of a.
But if you can,
why not?
Yeah. Have you always been a confident person and knowing who you are? Like, as you say, you can take the piss out of yourself a little bit. Like,
not really, but I think you get to the point. Certainly, when you put yourself out, and you would have both gone through this, that you get to a point where everyone's going to pass judgment. So you might as well have them pass judgment on something you are than something you're not.
Yeah.
So you're much better to be yourself and be someone that your friends recognise.
We'll write that down for an Instagram quote, I would have thought.
Hang on, say it again.
You're much better to be judged for someone you are than someone you're not. Don't get trapped into playing a role. Because sometimes your mates see you on the telly and identify that that's you, and that's the person they've known for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. That's fantastic. But when you go and you start playing a role, then it becomes problematic. You start losing contact with the people who really matter, which are your friends and family. Love all the people who watch the show, that's great. But you know, at the end of the day, the people who matter to me are my friends and my family.
Well, they're the only ones you're having a beer with.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to hang out with the others.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is interesting about the judgment thing. I think often we're constantly trying to avoid not being judged. But the reality is that everybody will.
And I think that's a very good point. And I've ever since I started wearing slightly, shall we say, unusual things, I've always wanted to take the mick out of myself first.
Yeah.
It's great to be able to say, today I'm dressed as a large, red, fluffy tennis ball. Or today I'm dressed as a Colombian drug dealer.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you have an understanding that you're a bit of a sex symbol?
I think that's totally ridiculous.
Well,
and I am reminded this regularly by my wife that obviously I'm not, and that's very useful.
I've got something to say here.
Yeah.
Stacey, for the entire time that I have known her, has been obsessed with you. In a different kind of a way. I don't know. Well, you can describe. Is it... What is it?
Well, I often talk about the difference between boys and men.
Yeah.
And often... We've spoken about this a lot on the series that we're doing focusing on The Bachelor show this year. Because I never really watched the show. But we're speaking about the honey... What's his face?
Honey Badger.
And how he is... moving towards a man, but still a boy man, in my opinion. When I was dating, I often found that there wasn't many examples of people that actually were comfortable with men, sitting as a man. And we had so many examples of what a man looks like in this country. And I kind of would flip it on its head and say, I find people attractive or sexy that are comfortable in themselves.
Yeah,
and I think that's what you exude on a regular basis. And I think that we would benefit more from seeing men that are different but confident in who they are as opposed to jumping in with the masses.
I'm just saying love hearts in your eyes. I can tell that you're married now.
Yeah.
Are you a just because flowers man?
Never when you've done anything wrong. Not that I would ever do anything wrong,
you say you're a romantic person? Because this is the thing, I feel like chicks, myself in particular, having been in a long relationship, I was like, oh man, we're together almost 8 years.
Australian blokes are so bad.
Because flowers.
If there are advice for my sons on things to do when you're in a relationship, number one, not a bad thing when the washing is on the line to take it in, fold it up, and put it away in the drawers. And so when your partner comes home and they open the drawers and their t-shirts are all folded in there, I'll tell you right now, that's more than any, you look lovely in that dress.
It's foreplay and then some.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone wins.
Absolutely right. So that, you know, cooking for your partner, there's a whole set, and Australian men aren't very good. They're a bit uncomfortable about that, showing their emotions.
I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because what do you think, growing up obviously in England, what do you think where's the difference? What's happened along the way here?
Well, it's been amazing what's happened to men here. They cook now. They understand flowers. They understand compliments. They understand that when their partner comes to them with a problem, you don't try and solve it. You just go, that's terrible, and ask them what they think they should do about it, and provide support. You know, there's all this stuff that probably when I arrived in Australia in '93, you know, most of the blokes of my age had no idea about.
Yeah.
You know, that the idea of giving flowers just because it's nice, because there are 5 ways of showing you love someone. And yeah, you may not be the person who can say I love you, but then you may also be the person who can do it through an action or do it through a gift, or, you know, there are all these different ways of doing it. I'm a big believer in the random stuff, the stuff that's a surprise, because I think it's nice, and because I think sometimes invariably when you do that, you often do it at a time when the person really appreciates it, really needs it.
Oh, and it's you're open to it without the expectation. There's something about the way you seep it in. It like sucks into you a little bit more when you've got no thought. I think it's more feeling rather than expectation.
It doesn't have to be big. I think that's the whole thing. It doesn't have to be spectacular. It could be just spending I love you in a pack of cards and having all the heart cards turned up. Or, you know, it can be leaving post-it notes around when you go on trips. Under the pillow.
Creatures love a surprise, you know? Too.
All that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the thing when you open, and also the great thing is that when they find one 5 days in, that, you know, the post-it note that's on the Milo that they only have, you know, on a Saturday when they got cold after playing netball, then they go, you know, so it's all those. It's thought and consideration. And I think the danger is that, and it's not hard to do, it's not expensive to do. I've always went out with people who were. You know, I would always be the bloke that would end up having a row because I'd come back late. I'd been out with mates and we'd end up getting, we'd meet at some club somewhere and we'd end up coming back at 3 a.m. And then with the woman I ended up marrying, the first time I did that, then she didn't ring me. She didn't give me a hard time when I came home. Next morning she went, oh, I'm so glad you're home. I was so worried. And that was it. And the next time I felt like such a heel. The next time I went out, all right, it's 10 o'clock, yeah. Probably going to be back. It's going on a bit. I think we're all going to go to the casino and play pontoon. I may be a bit late. Thank you. That's what you get. And that's what both understand. It's just the communication stuff. And they're worried that their partner's going to say, I need you to come home. And on the one in, and again, if you're on the other side, if you're the partner, on those 1 in 10 times you do need them to come home, then that's great. Then they should come home.
And communicate
but,
that.
But the danger is that it's like, well, come home now, I need you, because it becomes a control thing. And, you know, every relationship has to have a certain level of trust.
Yeah,
because otherwise it's kind of like
flexibility too. Yeah. The trust is interesting because I feel like sometimes trust is thrown around. Like you need to trust thinking of cheating, but it's got to be trust as well. What I've learned already in my very short marriage is it's trust about trusting that the person is a good person, trusting that they're not doing this to piss you off or to. There might be things that you feel sometimes, and then it's actually got nothing to do with who they are and what they're doing or what their intentions are. Mm. And that's my new understanding of trust, rather than this trust that they will not cheat on you, these like real surface value levels of what we looked as trust as a meaning of trust for. I've started to see it as a deeper trust.
But you also hope that there's also that dialogue going in their head, which it should always be, if my partner was here, would they feel uncomfortable with what's happening now? And you've got to have that kind of dialogue going on, because most of the time blokes are pretty, you know, there are three types of blokes, and they you know, there's some that are like that, there's some that aren't like that, and there's some that are just thinking about their mums. So it's like, you know, you want to find one from column A or column C, but not column B, and they're ones that are just problematic.
I want to put my head up and ask a question. You mentioned before, going back to the thought thing, and I want to get a dude's take on this. If a man, you know, when you said about, you know, popping a little post-it note here or doing thing, you know, it goes back to that thought thing that we were saying, that just because flowers, I think that's the sexiest and the most lovely part about it, where you go, oh, you thought of me, not on a birthday, not an anniversary, just because you were thinking of me and you picked it up on the way home. Stunning.
But by and large, we are. Blokes are doing that, but we never say that, communicate.
I was going to say, this is my question. If in a relationship, and having been in one that never, you know, had those kind of, oh, I just randomly thought of you and bought this, is that because they're not thinking of me or thinking of somebody, or are they just not that great at doing it? What I mean? Like, is that typically a bit of a symbol?
I think a lot of the times you've got to be in a situation where you need to look for other signs that they care, because maybe they're not giving you the signs you want to see. But then you've also got to say, when you do that, that pisses me off, or it makes me uncomfortable, or whatever. You've got to find a better type of bloke, I think. But do you always date the same kind of bloke?
Well, I dated one for very long, for most of my adult life, so for 8 years. So being single is quite a new thing.
But are you finding yourself dating similar blokes?
No, very different
blokes.
Now.
Well, that's
very
good.
Different.
When you're in that relationship, is always like that. I think there's a weird thing with relationships that when blokes get into a relationship, they tend not to grow. And they do that terrible thing, but I've not changed. I'm the same bloke I was. Women grow dramatically, and you can see that probably with
the end of our relationship.
But also during the relationship. You look at.
Well, that's what I mean. Why it ended? Because I think that's so stereotypical.
But I also think in terms of you know, the friends of my parents and in-laws generation, you know, the women are all nipping off to there, let's go to Cuba and do this, and the blokes just want to go and play golf at the golf course and sit and have a beer with the boys. They're really doing the same thing they've always done. The women, because of the traditional way that Australian families tend to work, the men are often out working in that generation. They were out working, and they and the women were at home. Then suddenly they get liberated. Kids go off to school, leave school, go to university, go to work, and suddenly they get to do all those things. So I think it's really important, if you're in a relationship, to be aware of how your partner is developing. My wife is obsessed with golf at the moment, so I've had to take up golf. So I know that if I didn't take up golf, I'd lose her to, good long girls' weekends going to golf. I want to be with her and I want to be playing golf, even though she's going to beat me. I'm happy to do that. So now I can kind of go along. That's the best, yeah. But so I think you've got to be mindful that, and again, women tend to get into relationships like thinking that they can change the bloke, and they probably can't.
No.
And the blokes will change a little bit, and that'll be the green flag.
Yeah.
The blokes
or not, the hooker in her.
Yeah. The blokes aren't going to change a lot, but also the blokes are going, well, I've met this girl, she's perfect, but she's going to develop and grow and have different interests, and you need to be willing to listen and to understand.
I said that to my partner when we met. I was like, I'll work. That's pretty hard on myself.
Grow up.
Like, so that means I grow. And if you're not up for the ride, we should kind of know that about each other quite early. What, before we wrap up, how did you fall in love with your wife?
Playing tennis.
Really? So sport, it's like some form of activity again.
Activity is good for blokes.
Met her or first?
No, I met her at a party in 89 when I was here on holiday. Blokes are very good. Blokes are very good at talking when they're doing stuff. So it's a very good bit of advice. If you want to have a conversation with a bloke, don't sit them down in a lounge room, because you will not get there. But go for a walk with them, or bring it up when you're driving, or when you're playing sport, or playing around a golf, or that's a good time to get blokes to kind of.
Because you're not thinking too much. Because you're occupied.
You're trying to win tennis, and then she's just. Well, how does that work?
I noticed that with my teenagers that they'll talk in those environments. That you take them out. You take them out of the norm and out of a. If you sit at a dining room table and say, well, "How was your day?" They won't tell you much. But if you go and kick the footy with them, they'll tell you everything. Well, another thing, they'll stop. And so I think that's a bit of a universal truth.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Next minute, I'll be out having tennis dates.
Chris,
you'll see you on the golf course.
Hello, Mash. I've taken up golf also. That's right, very good. Me and my friend Sam.
Let me introduce you to some nice blokes. You may find a lot of silver tops, but if you're not averse to being a 7-year-old bloke, it'll be fine.
They'll get us in an easy reservation.
It'll be easy. Yeah, no, look, you know what the terrible thing is? There is no, for all the millions and millions of pages written about the right, the wrong way, the whatever, there's nothing like your own personal experience, your own gut feeling. And I think part of it is we do tend to quieten our gut. And I find it amazing, and women have this amazing ability, and they probably don't know, they have this amazing ability always to, your partner always has the ability to appear. When a woman's flirting with you, they'll suddenly appear, and you go, how do they know? They just knew. They just appeared because they know. Because there's that kind of there's a strange sixth sense intuition going on. So I think the thing I've learned over the years is to follow your gut. If something feels wrong, don't do it. And if something feels right, go ahead and do it, and it'll probably be right. But
it's so interesting. That was the biggest thing. I'm doing some dating stuff. Writing about single Pringle, and we spoke about a lot of intuition. I did a live with some of our followers, and then they said, but. So many chicks said, but hang on, how do you do your intuition? Because I said, well, you use your intuition. There's nothing that I can help you from here, this point.
Yeah.
Kind of getting things in order of the way you think about yourself, whatever, but then it gets to a point where you need to, and I think there's a real lack of women trusting themselves, but knowing how to get in touch with that part of themselves.
That is why speed dating is such a brilliant way of getting back, because you very quickly get to know within 30 seconds whether that guy is wrong or right or right or wrong very, very quickly.
Instead of being kind of a dating column-esque, it moved into how to access your intuition, which is so interesting because everyone's will be different. But it was the biggest thing that people looked around. Like, it was like everyone was looking like, what's that?
I've got it now. Speed dating, but doing activities.
Speed dating, you're right. Because speed dating, you understand that speed dating, there's a whole class. There's speed dating basic, then speed dating for active people, and that's a different class of speed data there.
Next, then
you've got to get multiple lights to go up the lead.
Archery
dating. Is sexy.
No shit.
Yeah, with the lever. No.
I agree. Because you get, and then someone
colliding, sweaty. People get grumpy.
But archery is easy.
No, archery's so much sexier.
Because you have to be still.
Yeah. And you've got to bend your arms slightly. And you get to wear leather. You get to wear leather on your wrist, which always looks good.
Quite dangerous.
Yeah, but also quite dangerous. You know, the dangerous conversation, if they turn to you and ask you a question, you've got a problem.
And you need that. What do you need that word where you're out? Like, what's the word? Your safe word. Oh, like, you need a safe word in our
red street. Leather.
Red leather. Mac Preston, it's been divine.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thinkergirls.com.au is where you can find all of the podcast shows, all of the different articles featuring our guests and posse members and all the content that Christy and I bring on a weekly basis. It is the place where everything is kept. Thinkergirls.com.au. This podcast is presented by Stacey June and Christy Mercer. It's also produced by me, Stacey June, and produced and edited by Jordan Lott.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.